you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
My goodness, hello.
It is so good to see you.
It's so nice to see you too. Thanks for having me.
Hey buddy, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm doing well.
I instantly miss you even more.
Wow, you've got like a full, very professional setup going on.
You look like such a pro.
It's a ruse. It's a fake tree.
You're beside a palm.
Yeah, it's not quite between two ferns, is it?
Not quite.
Yeah,
not quite.
Super close. Yeah. Widen out. There's another one that no one else can see.
Yeah.
There's a secret fern.
John.
Yeah.
How are you, man? It's been a minute.
It's been a minute for sure. I don't know where to start. I'm doing very well. Yeah.
Good.
How about you?
Good.
You know, living the dream. Living the actor dream. It's like great for a second and then like not working. And then it's great again and then not working again. It's just life forever and ever.
Oh. Tell me about it. I was listening to a couple of the other episodes that you did, and you were talking about how, you know, most of us have to build a career up, and we have our ups and downs, and we have a lot of challenges, and we learn a lot of things along the way. And yeah, so quite frankly, to echo that, I feel happier and healthier than I've ever been, and work is really good and really fulfilling and lots of fun, and yeah, just
good,
exactly
dude.
Living that dream.
Living that dream. Yeah.
Yeah,
you don't look like you've aged a day, which is crazy to me.
Too kind, and likewise.
I put Vaseline on the lens before I dive in, so that helps.
On the lens,
all of the features.
Are you serious?
No,
I'm falling for this. Does that work?
If it worked, if only.
Yeah, forgot you were such a prankster.
John, thank you so much for returning to the shadows with us today. You obviously were such an instrumental part of the story and of the show and of why people were so enthralled with our show from the very beginning. And we wanted to just, you know, bring you on and chat a little bit today about you. And, you know, you were one of our first guest stars to come on the show and our first recurring characters who became such a... not controversial, but definitely talked about character on the show.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fair, yeah.
Yeah, and it's one that people got excited about and then very angry at you. And, you know, many, you ran the fans through the gamut of emotions throughout the course of your time on the show, and certainly all of us as well. So thank you for the impact that you made.
Oh, well, thank you. No, the fans are so incredible, aren't they? They were just so supportive from start to finish. I found, you know, there were things to talk about, of course, when it came to the casting and all of that. These are beloved characters.
We'll get into that. Sure. Why don't we start off with, tell everyone who you are, what got you interested in acting. Give us a little of your first baby steps.
Give us the John Corr backstory.
Okay. I'll try to keep it as succinct and to the point as possible.
We don't. So it really doesn't matter.
No? Okay. Well, I started acting very young, but I don't think I realized it. My mother was very young when I was born, and we ended up moving around quite a bit, sort of West Canada, East Canada again. And I went to a bunch of different schools. You know, there was a junior high switch as well, and a mid-grade switch, and all of these things. So I was the new kid a lot. And I very quickly realized, at least for myself, that popularity was erroneous in that just for showing up, you could be targeted just as easily as you could be somehow celebrated and embraced and accepted. But both seemed just really sort of impulsive. And like these were big reactions from human beings that had never experienced me, you know, for better or for worse. Kind of like how people reacted to, you know, my headshot when I was cast for this show.
Right.
Without, you know, knowing anything, for better or for worse. So at some point, you know, you start standing up for yourself with your bullies. And so you're in a lot of fights and you're not winning them all, but solving your problems that way is not cool. And I did a play of some kind just at a high school assembly, or probably younger than that, maybe junior high or something. And I was so terrified. You know, I'm very introverted. I'm shy right now. But I had to develop sort of extroverted skill sets as a defense mechanism. I just sort of forgot where I was and came unleashed on stage. And people, they stood up, they clapped, they liked me. And I thought, well, that's neat. Perhaps I can communicate and connect with people and either circumvent or solve problems, and however you want to phrase that, using storytelling and jokes and, you know, things like that. And so I ended up becoming that musical theater kid who was like Charlie and Charlie Brown, Scrooge and Scrooge and all of that stuff. And it was tons of fun. But I didn't really know what I was doing yet. And I fell in love with it later on when I started getting some parts that I really cared about, when I wasn't playing some stereotypical jock that I probably avoided in high school. You know, it was like character acting for me, but I felt typed. And I was grateful to work, but I didn't feel like I was stretching. I didn't feel compelled. It was more like, hey, this is better in construction this weekend. This will pay the rent. Eventually I just fell in love with it. And it went from being something a little selfish and protective to becoming something far more, I guess, meaningful to me. You know, whether it's a fart joke or some social activism, you can really make a difference in the world doing what we do, even negatively, you know? So with that comes a lot of responsibility, especially when you're given the opportunity to bring characters like this to life that are so very much alive already internationally. I couldn't believe the impact, the reach this had with or without me before I had anything to do with it.
Totally. I mean, first of all, that's a really beautiful story. And thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
About how you sort of got into it, because
it's supposed to be a happy story.
It is a happy story. Yeah. And I think it's interesting. You touched on something where you said the initial part of it was, I think you said selfish, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I think protective, maybe, definitely. But I don't think learning to protect yourself, learning to communicate the way you feel best to communicate, is selfish in any way. I think you did what you did best, and you used a skill set that you had to evolve into the human you are. And we're all grateful for the human you are. So yeah, maybe it's not as selfish as you think it is. You know what I mean?
I appreciate the perspective a great deal. Yeah. I guess that's just my way of saying that in the beginning, I definitely did it for me.
All I'm saying is that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think it's a good thing to do it for you. Anyway, why don't we talk about the beginnings of, because you, again, touched on it. So just moving on from that, and we've talked about this with a lot of people, but joining a show like Shadowhunters that's already been done, as books and it's already been done as a movie. And everyone has a concept of who Jace, Clary, Hodge are. And everyone's is a little bit different, especially from book fans, because when you read a book, everyone sees whoever that person is and they see them differently. Yeah. What was that like for you? How did you feel? Obviously, we the show went a slightly different way than the books and the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for those who haven't read the books, for those folks out there who don't know, Hodge, your character in the books, is sort of an elderly librarian-esque professor type, which you very clearly were not. And we're very quickly given a rather quippy nickname by the fandom, which I think
I forgot about that.
Wonderful. Yes, you were very quickly dubbed Hot Hodge by the Shadow fam. And rightly so. But tell us a little bit about that and what your experience was like when you first, you know, got the audition and read the part and what your thoughts were and sort of that whole, tell us a little bit about your audition process.
My goodness. Well, as a fan myself of things like this, I just felt this tremendous responsibility. I didn't know what I was going to come up with. I didn't know how they were going to respond to it. But I immediately just delved into the source material because I've always had, at least, I think if you're going to do something new, take something in a new direction, that's wonderful. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think you need to do it with the utmost respect for the source material. And so I looked for nuances, little nods, getting ahead of myself here. But at one point, I read one line about how Hodge had a favorite blue chipped mug. And, you know, nobody was really paying attention to me at the time, I don't think. Or what I'm saying is, it was like it was on a smaller scale. But I went to Twitter. I approved it with the art department. I said we whittled it down to three. And they asked me to pick. And I thought that was really cool. So we let the fans pick, you know. Yeah. And they picked the one I wanted anyway, which
that's
was
good.
it wasn't rigged.
It wasn't rigged.
But it was a very cute experience. And
yeah, it's so funny you bring that up because that's the first conversation I remember having with you. And this is something that, you know, yeah. Well, for someone that, you know, plays characters that are often very action oriented, you are such a contemplative and thoughtful person, and you put so much care into all the detail of your characters, and it's always been something I've respected and really found most fascinating about you. That was something that, you know, I always nerd out about little character things like that, and I know Dom does too. And
the fact
and the fact that you came on to set and you were sitting in the hair and makeup trailer, and you're like, "There's this mug, and I read this thing, and I want to put it in, and I don't know who to talk to, and I don't know like where should I go? I want to make sure that this is a part of him."
So
instantly,
green.
I was inspired by you on the first day on set. So just it's really amazing that you come into something and are instantly diving into the world head first.
Oh no, that's so mutual. I felt as the first dance, that's kind of a blur, but I sort of remember just the feeling of the first scene I did. I think you were both in it. I could be mistaken.
I think it was your introduction. I think we were introducing you training area.
I just felt as if waking up is not the right word, but I think we just did a read or something, and I remember feeling, whoa, okay, like we're coming in hot. Like this might actually really be something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what fired me up on the day. I mean, because of course you go to work with the best intentions. I think of it athletically now where, you know, you might not win the game, but you're driving into work. It's game time. Mm-hmm. You know, you're eating your Wheaties. You're trying to be sharp and prepared and all that good stuff, assuming that's what that role calls for and that's your process. You know what I mean? And it's just so refreshing when you show up and the people on the team want to be there. Mm-hmm. And they've done the work and they're ready to work and play, and they're not married to all of their ideas, but they've got a ton, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went, oh, I don't need to worry about any of this. I just need to be really present.
You know, we had a similar experience with you. Was it 13?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it was. With the hand.
Yeah.
So we'll jump back and forth to what we were talking about. But I don't know if you remember that day. And this is one of the days that I will treasure as a memory between you and I. Because they threw that torture scene at us. The morning of. Do you remember when your hand was lopped off and I was trying to get information about where Valentine is and I put my thumb in your stump?
Yeah.
And they were like, so that stump, for everyone out there, was literally like, was it cardboard or newspaper or something? They just wrapped up and poured blood on because we didn't have the prosthetic yet.
That's
so they just,
right.
it was threw something sort of at you.
They jimmy-rigged it, yeah.
Yeah, and this is something that was so great about working with John, is that preparedness really came into fruition there, where it's like, hey, we're going to throw this scene at you that you're not really supposed to do for another couple of days, but we're just here, so we're going to do it. And you're like, oh, shit. Okay, great. Let's just dive into that headspace. And he did. And his performance is incredible. And he's a consistently amazing screen partner to have. So thank you for that.
I'm speechless. I feel the exact same way. you made it so easy. I didn't feel curveballed. I don't remember if anything, it was just kind of funny and exciting.
Yeah, those like scenes at the end were
you were
fun.
Scary, man. Yeah. Sometimes I would see some of the episodes and I'd think, we got a little too adult there. They cut around it a little bit, you know, a little too bloody or a little too, you know what I mean? It's just sometimes we were in it.
Yeah, we got dark in it a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is okay, but we still want to be entertaining.
And exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Accessible.
Well, it's tricky when you're discussing this sort of subject matter. Like, we're talking about sort of the Shadowhunters equivalent of like hunting terrorists. And it's that sort of question of like, how far are you willing to go to, you know, are you willing to murder one to save hundreds? Maybe not. Are you willing to murder one to save 1,000? I don't know. And then you get in that weird sort of headspace. And like, as the actor's trying to portray that, we're in that place. We're in that questioning department of like, what are you willing to do to do the things that you know are right overall, but you have to take steps that you know are wrong along the way and whatever. And I think there are times, where the editors went in and went, that one's a little much. I don't know about that choice.
Yeah.
Well, and to kind of second that as well, Hodge is such an interesting character in regard to that. Because of his past, he's a very loyal character, but to what and to what end? And it was so interesting watching back, because we were all so, you know, in our own storylines in season one, trying to figure out what the show was. Oh, it's so interesting to watch it back and see all of the detail and all of the color that you brought to that storyline, and that struggle and that sort of wanting to find a place where you were valued as a soldier and as a fighter, and where your loyalty was valued. And ultimately, I almost felt bad for Hodge, because doors kept getting shut in his face, left, right, and center, even though he was proving his loyalty and risking life and literal limb for whoever he thought was going to be there for him on the other side.
Precisely, yeah. I remember I wanted the audience to feel conflicted. I thought if they uniformly adore this guy, I'm not doing my job. And if they uniformly loathe this guy, I'm not doing my job. I don't know if you want to get into his morality right off
Definitely.
The jump here.
Sure, but yeah, let's do it.
But when I auditioned, I think I did it British. To lend an erudition to try to age him up a tiny bit.
No way.
And I was ready to get the streak in the hair, the scarring we kept. But I was, that first day on set, they said, you're not British and you're taking your shirt off. And I was really confused.
What?
You know, these decisions, some things were still happening on the fly, I guess. And so I had sort of a vision given the source material. But I, like you said, it was still very formative while we collaboratively put those pieces together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really interesting to see the evolution of the character. But I think, so back to the casting for a moment, Cassandra Clare actually spoke up saying that, no, he's actually closer to the real age in the book. The movie sort of took this Alfred-y spin.
Yeah.
And I loved it, actually. But I think I was tasked with being, you know, when your older brother or sister or just somebody babysits you and they're not, they're old enough to not quite be a peer for a stage, but they're not parent level or guardian level. If this makes any sense, it's a really clumsy
way.
No,
it makes perfect sense.
No, it really does.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Right. So when the kids, so to speak, were younger, I mean, he fell in love with them. He would never, ever want to hurt those kids. As they age, they become his peers, and some of them even in many ways his superior. And so I think I had this idea in my head that he was a little older too. So the breakdown said no beards at all. The show will have no beards. And I broke that rule. And that probably worked in my favor a little bit. Yeah, I don't think I ever thought I was going to get it, but I just thought it was the coolest audition I'd seen in a long time. And so I was going to have fun doing it, you know? And then what we end up seeing on screen is this puzzle, some of the stuff that I brought. And at the end of the day, you're, in my mind anyway, you're a tradesman. So it's not about me showing up and going, I want to put this window in your house. If you go, no, not my style, put this one in, then it's my job to do that as best I can. You know what
That's
I mean?
It's a really interesting allegory. I've never really heard it described that way, but you're right. There is definitely an element of that. You know, you come in and you have to match thematically what the idea is, especially early, especially in the audition process. You know, if you come in and go, no, I'm doing this, they're going to go, okay, well, that's not what we asked for. So see, like that wasn't the job we hired you to do.
You won't work for long, you know, if you're too difficult. And you know, if you, I have a better idea. All of the time.
So interesting.
But it was very apparent from the rewatch that you were having so much fun with this character. And we got to see, you know, from Hodge coming in with all the, you were one of the first people that got to use our boards and use the little Shadowhunter computer information systems, go, these warlocks and this information, and this is the mission you have to go on. And there's so much, we talk a lot about this early on in the rewatches, but each of us got to establish different parts of the world. You know, Harry got to establish the warlocks. Dom and I and Emerald and Matt got to establish the Shadow Hunters. You know, and you got to establish so much with like the Circle Rune and our screens. And you were one of the first of the quote unquote grown-ups of the Shadow Hunters to come in and set the tone of what the world was that this new generation is coming into. And, you know, so we owe a lot of the richness of that world to those ideas that you brought and to the kind of window that you had ideas about putting in our house.
Oh my gosh. You were too kind. Too kind. No, I walked onto that set and it just looked so good and felt so good. Those costumes, how fun was
costumes
that?
Costumes were great.
We were ninja pirates.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
you had a background in martial arts pre the show, right?
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that, because obviously that benefited you and ended up benefiting me massively as well. Like having a good dance partner at the end is
so much fun.
Hugely helpful. But tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you got into martial arts and then how that influenced your Shadow Hunters career.
I've been studying martial arts and many for far longer than I've been acting. I think that was maybe one of my first loves and first defense mechanisms, you know, before I found acting or guitar or writing or things like that. It was my antidepressant, my anti-drug. It was just, I very early on recognized that, oh, if I break a sweat, I feel better. And mm-hmm. if I feel better, I think smarter. And I mean, I'm dumbing it down for myself here, but I think more better.
Think more better. Do better. Yeah. Do better. Wow, I couldn't even get there. Tried so hard.
And so, you know, growing up, of course, I just idolized guys like Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali, who, you know, they had avant-garde social justice ideas, you know, they just did so much in their lives with and without the martial arts, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was just drawn to a lot of these guys who, the main takeaway for me was process, that like learning a backflip reinforced everything that you learn when you learn to ride your bike, I guess, which is, you know, you fall down and you can get up and do better and eventually succeed. And I think it's a very valuable lesson that, for me, reinforcing that constantly is really healthy. And then I also found it to be meditation and motion, because, you know, being upside down, if you're doing something acrobatic, is really, to me, you know, it's scary. It's hard work.
Yeah.
So I can't think, I'm not worried about getting the job or not when I'm worried about landing on my feet.
Right.
And so as a young person, especially in going through, you know, that pubescent formative period, or even in college when you're just finding yourself, you're individuating and all of that, I don't know, I just found it was sort of a compass that kept pulling me back. And Shadow Hunters, actually, I hadn't been doing as much as for a little while. And as soon as I got the part, I got really serious just in my spare time, in case we got to use any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was something that, it was a gift, actually, because even, you know, after my time on the show, I kept up. And that has led to, you know, the work I'm doing now. Yeah, on the Flash, flying around and fighting people, and
And what a small world! You know, it's so funny to what a small world to sort of end up full circle.
My Arrow sister.
Yeah.
In the
same superhero world, still on opposite sides of, well, sort of. I don't know. Both of our characters in that world are a bit on the fence of good and evil, but that makes it fun.
In the writer's hands.
Yeah.
Every script I get, do I die? Am I good or evil? Or, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
No idea.
Skip to the end. Let's figure it out.
So I don't know if that answered your question or not.
It did. Yeah, no, it does. Yeah. And I'm glad you're keeping it up, because you came into the show. I think the first thing we see of Hodge is your training with the young lady in the training center and beat her sort of in semi-spectacular fashion. And then we come in. Break the reverie. But then there are sort of three like very spectacular Hodge fights, especially in season or throughout season one.
Mm-hmm.
There's that one. There's the one with the Forsaken, which we'll talk about.
It's a ton of fun.
Where you do this like round off flip, but on the stick, which is just incredible, like an incredible thing to have. I feel like I remember asking someone, did John do that? And they were like, yeah, John did that. I was like, wow, that's some pretty gnarly stuff. And then we had the fight at the end as well, which we'll get into. But
oh,
it's cool,
God,
you know,
right.
So much fun. I mean, freezing ass cold in a skate park all made out of concrete. So they're like, just don't fall down.
Doesn't get any more legitimate than that, though, does it?
No.
Yeah.
But that was, again, like, it's a good, it's, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit over the course of the show, obviously being so stunts heavy. And it such a huge part of it is having someone that you trust, having someone that you know, a dance partner that you trust is coming at this from a smart, measured, I guess, attack point. Because anything less than that is dangerous, and you don't want to be working in a dangerous place. And I felt safe with you. I really did.
Likewise. Yeah. I certainly have not felt safe working with a lot of different people.
Really?
I couldn't agree more.
Wow.
Saying, I've been injured through for lack of a better word, ignorance, I guess, you know, there's almost no excuse for the accident happening other than somebody thinking they had a better idea, didn't run
That's exactly the issue. Yeah.
That sort of improving is not.
Yeah. You can't, there's no room for it in this world. You know, it's like improving in a fight stops it being a fight scene. And it's a fight. Then if you don't know what's coming, it's a fight. You're in a fight. Yeah. And it's impossible to deal with.
Right. To me, you're playing a song together. And if you both, like, first of all, you both have to be able to play that song really well. But then you have to kind of, you have to try to stay in the same time with one another.
Yeah.
You know, if either one of us just speeds it up or slows it down, we might make a mess here, if that makes any sense. And so,
of course,
I think it's worth being, I mean, of course, be alive and be well-trained and you know, there's some flexibility. But I really think when it comes to stunts that you almost have to be over-practical to keep everybody safe.
Second nature has to be like something you're not even thinking about. Like, I need to think about the performance. The rest of it, what my hands, my arms, and my face, and my head, and my legs are doing, my body needs to do that. It needs to do that on its own. And then I'm aware of, like, and then I guess it helps me too. Like, if it's sort of, it's almost like doing an accent. Like, if you're physically feeling like these are the motions that we're doing and this is what we're playing here, then as soon as something changes, your body tells you something's wrong. And I don't know what it is, but like an arm's out of place or a foot's out of place or something's coming at me from the wrong angle or whatever. And you sort of see it and you're like, oh, it's alien all of a sudden. Something needs to stop. Like, it's something's off, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and that's something, you know, we talk about how fun stunts are and how much we love fighting and doing all this stuff all the time. But we were able to have fun on a show like Shadowhunters because of the trust and the practice that all of us had. And because we all took the safety aspect of it so seriously. And it's, you know, in the true fashion of don't try this at home, kids, you know, it's very much, it takes a lot of work. And that's something that, you know, in both you two, I have massive respect for.
Well, I was going to say, to your credit, and I'm fairly certain most, if not all of the cast, you all just went gung-ho with training.
We did.
And I thought that was so cool. I mean, in a post-Marvel world, now we see more of it. But even at that time, it was a little more uncommon and more transformative. I mean, you transformed your bodies. It was wild. It was wild to see so much growth.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
All that growth off screen translates to, you know, it enriched the character's growth on screen. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just remarkable to see them all grow up together and kick more ass.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, and also, you know, speaking of transformation, your character went through quite a transformation on the show. You start off as this sort of older brother, teacher, caretaker, as it were. And by the end, you're arguably one of the biggest villains of season one. Maybe a morally
like a
questionable
pivotal,
character.
A pivotal role for sure. I don't know if I'd say villain. The reason I'll say that is because I'm in the scene with you in season two. I'm in the scene with you where we have parallel cells. And I remember
I loved that,
coming, it was such a good scene. And the reason why I liked it so much is I came into it with my sort of motivation being, Fuck this guy. Like, he betrayed us all. He's led to so many issues. Fuck this guy. And then the performance, the conversation that we had with each other really mellowed me as Jace. Like, it mellowed and I ended up sympathizing. Like, that's how that scene ends. Wow. Is with, like, maybe he's right. Like, maybe he did get a bad rap with this. And would I have made those choices? Probably not. But can I blame him for making them? I don't know if I can. And I think that's in my head, and I think I've said this before on this show, that's what makes a good, like, villain, or not even villain in this case. Like, that's what makes a good sort of antithesis, is someone you can kind of get behind their ideology. You know what I mean? Someone who you're like, I kind of get it. Like, I kind of get it. Like, Thanos is a great example. Like, he wanted to do genocide. That's a horrible idea. But he wanted to do it to preserve life.
Right.
So is he a bad guy? Because his motivations, I mean, he's obviously a bad guy. He wants to do a genesis. Like, it's a genesis, a genocide. It's a horrendous thing to contemplate, but his motivations in his head are positive. So there has to be a world in which you're like, I get what you're trying to do, but not this way. This isn't how it happens, you know? And that was a cool thing for me to experience with you, for sure.
Yeah, I just thought that was probably, I mean, it's the crux of the character. It's the most interesting part of the character for me is that, I mean, I'm sure you've played a lot of unsavory characters yourself. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's not our job to agree with what's on the page, with what they do, but it is our job to try to compassionately empathize with their motivations, to figure out what those are, whether we agree with them or not. I did 10 murders to feed my son. Okay, well, let's whether I agree or not, let's examine this.
Yeah.
Right.
And so Hodge was tons of fun in that way. There was lots of doublespeak, but at the same time, so much sincerity. I do believe that he thought he could get away with taking control of his own circumstances. He felt disproportionately punished post-Circle Uprising and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think he believed in it for a time. And at some point, enough just seemed like enough. He saw other people being free or being pardoned. You know, at some point, he just, I think, felt like he got a really short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, maybe he'd have to sacrifice a lot of different things, but I don't think he ever meant to sacrifice any people. And of course, we could argue, like, duh, what did you think was going to happen? Right. But when you're in it, you're in it.
Yeah. And he doesn't pull any triggers. Like, he's not that guy. He hands the gun off, but he doesn't pull any triggers necessarily. And like you say, you know, it is about empathizing. It is about understanding these people.
That's
whether we agree with them or not. Like, we have to, I have to understand who they are. Otherwise, I'm just saying words loud. That's what I'm doing otherwise, you know? Like, I have to get it to a certain extent, whether I agree with it or not, for whatever it is. There has to be a world in which I get it. I get this choice.
Mm-hmm. And I think if there's anything we've learned over the years, at least especially the last couple of years, and as our world has become arguably more divisive than ever, it's all about listening and understanding and trying to go, okay, I don't agree with your perspective, but why do you feel this way? And let me try and understand it so that we can solve it. And that's sort of how you have to approach characters like that, is go, okay, absolutely, I don't agree. This isn't right necessarily, but you have a reason, and what is it? And let's figure it out. And that's kind of the most fascinating part. And there's a reason we tell stories about good people and bad people and people in between, because we're all human. And we all, you know, connect and relate in some way, form or fashion.
Oh, yes. We have firsts and seconds and thirds and states and phases. And it baffles me sometimes when somebody talks about somebody they haven't seen for 20 years as if they still know that person today. You know?
Yeah.
So-and-so might be, man, they might have leveled up. They might have taken a lot of accountability.
They might have leveled down. It doesn't
matter.
They're a different human being. Like 20 years ago, whether you went up, down, nobody stayed the same for 20 years. That's my genuine opinion. You did not, even if you felt like you did, you had 20 years worth of experiences. Even if you stayed in your house, you had 20 winters and 20 summers and you experienced them 20 different ways. You know what I mean?
That's the experience of inexperience even.
Exactly. Yeah. And that has changed you in a way as well. Like every day we're evolving and we're moving and you can't be the same person. And that, I think, is what makes interesting characters too, is if you sort of develop this understanding, and I'm still working on it for sure.
Aren't we all?
You develop this understanding. Yeah, right? Like, as soon as you've stopped learning, then why are you still doing it? But it's that question of like, well, the scene I just did happened 3 days ago. So what happened to me in those 3 days? I didn't spend 3 days walking from there to here. And if I did, what happened in that walk? Like, there's 3 days, there's 72 hours of time that stuff happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? How do we develop this into a thing? I knew this was going to happen. When we got you on, I knew we were going to get into a much more existential, like, acting theory.
Do we do this? Is this what we do?
Of course.
Yeah. I knew that this is what was going to happen for sure. Oh, yeah. I was like, I looked at the brief briefly and I was like, there's no way we're not getting to any of that.
I was concerned I'd digress a lot.
No, it's great.
You're both so easy to talk to.
That's what's wonderful about you.
Point of this. This is the whole point of this podcast. And everyone has a different perspective. Everyone has a different idea. Mm. So talking to you about acting and talking to Alberto about acting, who also, we went very deep into theory, but it's two completely different perspectives from two different worlds. So these are new conversations that not only we get to have, but we get to share with people. We get to tell people our experiences. You know, a lot of people, when we do these conventions and stuff, I'll get the question, probably once at least per convention, I want to be an actor. Do you have any advice? I say, yeah, I do. I have a whole shit ton of advice. But my advice is going to be different from Kat's, who's going to be different from John's, different from Matt's, different from Alberto's. My number one piece of advice, honestly, talk to as many different actors as you can and take little bits that you like from every single one of them, because that's what I did. That's what I did growing up. Every actor I worked with, even if it was, I took something that like, I hate that. And I don't ever want to do that because it's for whatever reason, you know, but it's now it's in my backpack. I'm like, I don't want to be that. I don't ever want to do that. Or something where I'm like, that's incredible. I'm having that. That's now going in my little thing. Something as simple as like one of my very early jobs. There was a guy who made a point of learning everyone's name day one. He went around and made a point. So like at lunch, he went around and like solidified everyone's name. And I'm like, that's not only, I mean, it's just a normal, like that's how you should be at work. Just as a respect it's thing lovely. To know everybody's name. But there's 200 people on set, which is tricky. But he spent those first couple of days like making sure it was done. And it made everyone feel like special. It made everyone feel seen. And it's a really important thing to do. And I was like, that's lovely. And it's made me really like you. And I'm having it. I'm gonna make sure that that's something I do, you know?
Yeah.
I think especially when we're fortunate enough to be in lead positions, but in general, I do believe that no matter what your process is, it's part of the job is being pleasant with other people. And if you can do anything to brighten someone's day in a way that is constructive, it's not necessarily, you know, okay, Captain Love and Sunshine, we have work to do.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Time and place, buddy.
Let's do it quick.
Yeah. Can you not drop a line today?
Yeah. See, that's my camera op on this show I just finished, Partner Track, coming summer to Netflix.
Congratulations.
Hey, I don't know. They haven't told me when it's coming out. I developed a very good relationship with camera op, well, lots of people, but camera op, Patrick. And we would have that conversation all the time where he'd be like, hey, man, how's it going? He'd be like, yeah, good, dude. Good. Are you going to step on your fucking mark today? And I'm like, I'm going to try. Do my best.
There's a guy there, Mark, who's like, I'm sick of him stepping on me.
Yeah, right? Seriously.
Mark's like, could you not step on me today?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So literal. But,
you know, it's really amazing when you get to work on a project, because we've all worked on so many different projects over the years and so many different things and met a ton of groups of people. But at least for me, Shadowhunters will always be special because of the people. And as you say, so much of it is being pleasant and being personable and getting to know folks. And we say that, but it's not always the case. And it's not always as warm and as familial feeling as Shadowhunters. And you know, that's something that I think each of us has taken with us and really appreciated. But 100%. It's really wonderful when you can walk onto a set and go, oh, these people are excited to be here. They're excited for what the story that we're going to tell. They're wonderful people and also incredible artists. And that's, you know, that's Shadowhunters. And then you bring the fandom in and it just becomes a dream.
Absolutely.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Let me ask you a question, John. Do you think, because I have sort of a loose-ish theory about how this happened with sort of the closeness and the niceties on set and whatever. Have you found that more in Canada than anywhere else? Not really. Interesting.
Well, I did a British TV show for a while and we were really, really tight. It was a location shoot in South Africa. But those things don't...
Well, so South Africa, I felt it as well.
Yeah, South Africa is great
really
as
interesting.
Well.
Oh, South Africa.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
I love it. That's what I mean. It's not necessarily the actors or the first team, as they call it. Although, obviously, if the first team's shitty, then it tends to roll downhill. But a lot of the crew, it was very helpful. And I found South African crew, too, to be... And I've never really worked with crew that I found negative at any point. But I've definitely had more experiences where I'm like, wow, this is really like exceptionally pleasant. And Canada was one of those.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, it definitely doesn't happen for me that on every job we just hang out or you know, we're adults now. People are married with children or this or that. I mean, we don't, sometimes we're there to work and, you know, if there's some kind of a bond that forms organically, great. But if not, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. And Shadowhunters was just this immediate gel. I don't know what the secret ingredient was, but a lot of us, I think, were...
I'm starting to question whether or not they put some shit in the water. Like, if they... you know what I mean? Like, we were all dosed with something when we walked on, and that's
just
why everyone just got on so well.
In the studio. Yeah. That was the white dust that fell down sometimes.
Yeah.
It's the magic pixie dust.
They're misting holy water. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Don't tell the vampires. No, but, you know, John, you yourself are such a... creative and such an artist in so many ways, you know, and I think that's a lot of it. We're all storytellers and we're all here to do different things, but we get these briefs every time we do one of these and we always learn something about these people that we've known, like yourself, for so many years. I had no idea you were a novelist as well.
Oh.
So tell us a little bit.
Tell us about this.
Tell us about this novel that you drafted and your writing as well and sort of that aspect.
I was convinced that as soon as I published the novel, I would die by some inverse miracle. The novel was sort of this tether. I think I finished the first draft when I was 19. It was something that was very... I needed something that nobody could give to me or take away. And writing became my choice medium. And for example, when I started acting, I realized, okay, we answer to directors and producers and writers and even our colleagues as we collaborate. And, you know, it was a medium in which I was more than happy to relinquish control. But when it came to my writing, there was a part of me that went, no, this is, I mean, of course you work with editors and mm-hmm. you know, all of that. You can't be an egoist, an echo chamber, of course, and expect to be taken. I wouldn't like that guy.
Right, right, right.
And so I think I was a little precious about it for a time. And it was just something that I just kept working on and kept working on. But as you grow, your voice grows. And then the novel grows. And I've done a lot since. And I've published short stories and things like that. But as you know, acting is so full time, especially when you're trying to get something going.
Yeah, right at the beginning, for sure.
Yeah. And so I've done all kinds of different jobs in my life. But writing, I think, fiction and non, is probably what I'm best at. And it's something that I'd like to do professionally and not simply for the sake of it, you know, not to be another guy with a book. But it's really special to me. And I'm really excited to share that with the world. And
yeah, that's so exciting.
The short stories as well. And
is there anything we can find now? I would love to pick one up.
Yeah,
there is, actually. I mean, if the easiest way and totally free, if you go to my Instagram and you go to my writing highlights, I'm fairly mm-hmm. certain you can swipe up and go to a link.
Okay.
Fair warning, it's not very PG-13 most of the time. A lot of these were written when I was a little younger, but those are republished there. Those are all right. published pieces. If you're cool. interested, I'd be honored.
Just taking a note. I'm going to do it as soon as we're done today.
Cool, man. Thank you.
Well, speaking of the writing, what else is in your future? What do you have jobs that you're still working on? Is there anything you want to be working on? What's like Oof. John Corr's dream next year, 5 years,
wow. yeah.
six
next,
months,
the next,
next for, tomorrow,
in
who knows?
Writing terminologies, what's the next chapter for John Corr?
Ooh, wow. Well, it's all to be continued, isn't it? I mean, not unlike yourselves. I think we people like us tend to have a lot of different things going on, or at mm-hmm. least being cooked up. And so I was definitely very focused on working on The Flash and putting myself through some rigorous training and things like that. But now that we're on hiatus, I've segued. I'm actually voicing an audiobook. It's not something that I wrote, but I'm playing a character.
Cool.
In sci-fi right now, which is tons of fun.
Cool. That's always fun. Audiobooks are so fun.
Right?
What is the book?
It's called Affinity, and it's actually based on a tabletop game that just came out.
Oh, amazing. Cool.
A good steampunky multiple Very timeline. Cool. Yeah, so I play the same guy in three different timelines. And I'm really excited for you guys to see it. The art's
That's
on
great.
There.
Yeah, can you tell us about that character? That sounds amazing. Or are you not allowed to say? I don't want to get you in trouble.
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't actually know.
Okay.
Let's err on the side of safety and not say
Yeah, thank
just
you.
Just in no, case.
I'm
yeah, you know.
Doing
that's,
a read
that's
tonight.
Very smart. I'm such a huge nerd for all those
I'll get back to you with that one.
Things.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Please
you
do.
You can tell us after, because I'm a huge... I just recently started playing D&D for the first time. And
so much
I'm
fun.
Obsessed.
It's so much fun.
So yeah. Anything in those worlds now, I'm just fascinated by. It's a whole new world of character building that I, you know, the actor who loves creating characters in me is like, wait, I can do this in my spare time as well? This is awesome.
So much fun. Yeah. I was like, where's this been all my life? I don't know how to do it alone. I don't know how to do the math, you know, but
yeah.
I like ideas. And voices,
yeah,
and rolling dice,
yeah.
Me
like,
too.
Oh, I can make a whole person with powers and do stuff. Yeah, let's go into a new world.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's super
awesome.
Fun.
Well, congrats, that's so amazing.
Oh,
that's
thanks. Really cool. Yeah.
Okay, two part question. If you could come back and do another season of the show, let's forget that last scene with Hodge happened, and you could come back and do another season of the show. What do you think he would do? Where do you think he would go?
Yeah, speaking of what has happened to Hodge, do you think? If, you know, that last scene aside, what would have happened?
That's a really good question. Would he still be imprisoned?
Well, so let's toy with the idea a little. So let's say that instead of that scene ending the way it did,
yeah,
let's say mm-hmm. Jace broke you out and just said, go away. You go do your Hodge thing.
Have your freedom.
Then what happens? Then what's
Make
the
your
next
own
step
life.
From there?
Right. Man, I would assume he would respect and appreciate that, given what an enormous
You'd hope so, for sure.
Pass, that is, yeah.
I'd expect like at least you a know? Muffin basket or something, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all right, I live in New Zealand now. That's cool. thank you.
There's like a New That's Zealand right. Institute that pops up, and we're like, wait, what is this? We've never seen this on the map before. There's like an Antarctica Institute, and Hodge is just in an igloo with the penguins.
He's working closely with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
I'm always alone. I'll go first.
Yeah.
First shadow hunter in space. Yeah, exactly. International Space Station shadow hunter. Hodge Star
Moon Trek. Shadow hunters. Yeah. If that's not a spinoff, I don't know what is. That's if we don't have moon right? shadow hunters by 2025, someone's really dropped the ball.
It's true. It's like The Martian meets shadow hunters. Let's
yeah.
go.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked a lot about the fandom and about all of these interactions that we've had. Do you have a favorite fan interaction over the years or something that someone said or a message you've received or any kind of anything like that?
Several. I mean, it's very hard to choose a single one. I mean, yeah. There was one woman on YouTube who made a song that was really good and really funny about my casting. I had never experienced anything like that before. Yeah, it was lovely. Very heartwarming, very accepting, very complimentary. But fast forward, doing a convention in London without you guys felt so strange.
What happened there? Where was my invite? I'm in London.
I thought it was your
like
thing.
8 minutes away from me.
I just thought, oh, they're all busy, I guess. So I'm getting on this plane. Like, why am I here? What am I? If they're not here, what am I doing? But I'm so glad I went. The fans were just incredible. And for example, there was this one woman who was weeping in my arms. She was shaking. And I think someone called out. They were kind of teasing like something about her being a super fan. And and I just sort of made this cut it out gesture because she had just finished telling me that she got out of hospital like just days before. And she had thought she was going to be dead instead of at this thing that she had tickets for. And she just broke down sharing it. And it was powerful and it, you know, came out of nowhere. And it's experiences like that that you walk away with that people have, they share so much of themselves sometimes. They give you so much.
Yeah, it has a real impact.
I'm not trying to be trendy or cheesy or I'm not appealing to anything or anyone. I genuinely walk away from these things blown away and I feel so humbled. You know, we can be so hard on ourselves as well sometimes and full of fear and doubt and confusion and regret or all kinds of emotions that require life skills to conceptualize and deal with on a regular basis. I just always feel like whether it's a little or a lot, those experiences make me a better person and a better actor as well, I think. Yeah, you guys were missed. We had tons of fun, but you were missed.
Next time.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's something I always love about the Shadow Fam, and you hit the nail on the head with that, is that it is so humbling, and it really does remind you. Yes, we play these, you know, superheroes or supernatural creatures on screen, but everything they go through is so human, and that's what people connect with. And then we get to go and we get to meet these people and spend time and hear their stories and feel that love. And that's why I think all of us keep going back to the Shadow Fam, and that's why we're doing this podcast, and that's why this is so special, because of these human connections. And again, we aren't trying to be cheesy or anything. It is family. Yeah. And it's we're all kind of bonded because of this story. And there's something there's something special about that.
Oh yes. Yes. Yeah. Very special. No, I was tremendously honored that you guys thought to bring me on. And
of course. Yeah. No, we couldn't have done it without you.
Being a part of this thing. Like I said, it happened so fast and I was so green, but I couldn't have been happier. To be a part of something that means so much to so many people.
I can't think of a better way to end the episode, honestly. Like,
we're
literally at exactly the 30-minute mark, because we started at 4:30, my time. You just came out with this, like, wonderful speech about how thankful you are for everything. I was like, holy shit, that's fucking perfect. That's how we end the show. That's great.
You guys are awesome. I'm going to be thinking about this all day and wondering if I was clumsy or rambly.
No, it was perfect, man. It was
you
perfect.
You are anything but. No, we are so grateful.
Thank you.
I love you guys. Thank you so much.
Love you too, John.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by Catherine McNamara and Dominic Sherwood. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia, and our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey and performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara. The episode was mixed by Seth Alansky. Be sure to subscribe to Return to the Shadows wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave us a review.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.